Tom Westerholm joins the show to talk about Phoenix, preview the LA Clippers, and man, we've got travel stories. It's the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. I'm a mother. I'm a baby, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly.
Oh, God, we are in Los Angeles.
Literally nobody is going to listen to this podcast because you intro'd it with, like, hey, we're going to talk travel stories.
No, you don't even know, like, I've been told that people want inside stuff. They want to know. They want a look behind the scenes. And we're going to give it to them.
You're going to sit there and listen.
You're going to listen to us. Bitch and moan, damn it, because it is, it's Tuesday night in Los Angeles. It's almost Wednesday morning back home in Boston.
Wild.
We've been traveling for what feels like a month. I'm John Corrales, joined by Tom Westerholm, both of MassLive.com. Find all our work on MassLive.com/Celtics. You know, an inside look at the life of a beat writer I think would be interesting. We'll do that, I think, a little bit later. We'll talk about the Clippers in the second segment, but we got a win over the Phoenix Suns that just to get another voice on to kind of wrap things up in that regard. I thought that one thing that I really liked was that Kemba kind of pulled his heroics early. Like,
yeah,
that second quarter run, that end of second quarter run, it was very heavily Kemba influence. It's almost like he saved the end of the fourth quarter. He did it in the end of a different half. And he was like, that's it. Let's put these guys away. I'm done messing around with these guys.
Which is impressive, honestly, because that's a good team. And like, it really did kind of feel like Kemba and Tatum and then Brad Wanamaker just kind of all decided, right. Okay, like that. Enough of this. We're tired. We're on the road.
Brad Wanamaker's a pro.
He's a pro's pro. The best player on the Celtics, if you ask the other Brad in the room. But no, I just think it was impressive to see them just kind of put a good team to bed. Like, they were just like, listen, you guys are having a cute little run. You know, good job. You guys don't have Ricky Rubio. Like, let's put this thing out of reach and just kind of keep it there. And that's, you know, that's kind of what they did. Like, that, you know, like you said, Kemba went on that run. Tatum came out in the third quarter and just kind of blew the doors off the game. And then, you know, there's a little run after Smart got injured, but yeah, I mean, they just kind of took care of business. It was just a very business-like win, which doesn't make for a great narrative, like great storytelling after the game. It was hard to write stuff, but it was still, I think when you look back, like, that's bouncing back on the second night of a back-to-back, very business-like win like that where your stars look that good. That's, you know, I think that's a really positive sign for them.
I like the way you put that. Business-like win. It was very nice. And now I'm still like in the midst of rewatching this game, and there were those stretches, but it was like a steady march down. You know, if you compare it to like the New England Patriots or the NFL, it's one of those like 15 play drives that takes up most of a quarter and is just eating up the time. Like, and to the point of the game finished like 15 minutes sooner than a normal NBA game would, because they just kept on going. It was kind of fairly clean. It wasn't a ton of fouling. It was just force a miss, grab the rebound, come on down, work your offense. Same thing over and over and over again. Obviously there were mistakes throughout, like in any game. And I think some guys are kind of worn down by the road trip, but
and just a road heavy November.
It's a very road heavy November. And this is not only road heavy, it's the every other day. This was a back to back. You're constantly in a new city. You're changing time zones. It is hard on anybody, even these finely tuned athletes and reporters.
I often consider myself finely tuned.
to go out there and perform. So I think, like, to me, I don't know if you have the same opinion. I feel like Jaylen Brown was kind of telling us something after the Sacramento game where he was like talking about being mentally sound no matter what. And I think you see him in this Phoenix game play okay, but nothing spectacular. I think he's one of the guys, he's basically telling us, I'm kind of worn down right now and I have to like get myself past that moment. So, but it was just good that the rest of the team just kept marching forward.
For sure. I think, you know, I thought maybe the most interesting thing about that game, I thought was kind of the way that they defended Devin Booker. I thought it was kind of instructive as to one of the differences between last year and this year. You know, they a lot of times around the pick and roll, they would kind of blitz him, they would kind of trap him a little bit, and it was so much more effective than last year's team would have been. So, like,
right.
You know, these guys are flying all over the court. They're, you know, just constantly on a string. And I think that kind of relates to this in that they are able to, you know, on the third night of a road trip, the second night of a back-to-back, you know, third game in four nights,
yeah.
That they're still able to kind of maintain that focus. I don't think last year's team would have been able to do that. I think that's one of the big differences. And I think, you know, one of the other big differences is just the fact that, you know, you can trust everybody to fly around because one of your guys isn't right. Spacing out. But I do think that that's an instructive kind of what Jaylen, you know, was talking about is like, you know, when this team is at its best, it is very mentally focused. It is, you know, next play, next play, next play, like, you know, just staying in the moment and staying like, you know, like you said, get a stop, come back down, make a good play, get a bucket, get a stop, you know, and then they did that. And, you know, they had, I also thought they were pretty good. I haven't looked at the numbers. I thought they were pretty good at like forcing transition too, even if it was like, you know, sort of delayed transition as well. I thought they, you know, did a pretty nice job of kind of, you know, forcing the miss and getting out quickly.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I think all of those things kind of speak to your point though about like, you know, focusing on what had just happened, focusing on what the next play was, and kind of moving on from there.
This paper final box score that I have is kind of useless in that regard, but. They did force, well, let's see. They did force 12 turnovers. Actually, the Celtics had 15 turnovers.
I would imagine.
Oh, no, wait. You know why this one's is trash? Because it's the Kings box score. Never mind. That's the road for you. I could have sworn I threw the Phoenix one in here. Maybe I threw the Phoenix one out. Anyway, I thought that I remember at the half, I tweeted out something like the Celtics had 10-0 lead at the half on second chance points.
Yeah.
Which was, to your point, thought the end of the first half they did a great job of limiting the Suns to one shot. And even some of the shots that may have been okay looks that were misses, whatever. That's, you're gonna miss open looks. But they got the ball. They didn't screw around. And one of the downfalls of this team throughout this season so far is that one stretch, they always have like a 5-minute stretch where they're constantly giving up offensive rebounds. It's almost like they lose focus for a short blip. They didn't do that, and then they were rebounding. Jaylen and Jason both were really good at getting offensive rebounds and keeping the ball alive in the second quarter and giving themselves the opportunity to go on this run. I brought it up. I wrote the note down that I want to talk about Enes Kanter. And I think that Enes Kanter looked pretty bad in this game.
I could not agree more. I thought that Robert Williams had one of his worst games as a pro, and I still kind of thought he looked better than Enes Kanter out there.
He did. He really did. And I'm glad you said it because I feel like I'm getting accused. First of all, I'm the one that was saying earlier that I wanted him to get the G League reps just to get his yeah, habits yeah. down. And then he had some good games. People are like, oh, man, you still want him in the G League? And now he's having these bad games. I'm just bringing out the point. Like, he had a pretty bad game. Like,
he did.
He really did not look great. He had one highlight block. But after that, it was, I think, like 5 or 6 bad plays in a row. And now it feels like every time I bring it up, people are like, oh, look at John bringing up bad Time Lord stuff, trying to prove his point.
I mean, all right. So here, I'll do this one then, because I have never been accused of disliking Robert
Please.
Williams. So I
like Robert Williams, by the way.
Rob has been a minor disaster on the defensive end. They're giving up, I don't remember what the number is right now, but it's in the double digits. They're like 12 or 13 points per 100 possessions worse with him on the floor defensively. And interestingly, they're about 14 or 15 points per possession better offensively. So he is still a net positive somehow, despite those disastrous defensive moments. And you know, I think when you factor in his rebounding, when you factor in the fact that he's gotten really good at like using all of his athleticism, all of his length, and just kind of going and like plucking the ball out from over people, even when he doesn't have position,
right,
you can kind of see where he starts to become that net positive. But I think one of the things that you have to remember with him is like the defense is really bad right now, and he's working on it. He's a redshirt rookie. You know, if you look at him like as a rotation player, he's only in his 12th game as an NBA rotation player. Like that matters. You know, he's
absolutely,
he's going to learn this stuff. He's going to improve. How much he improves kind of remains to be seen. He's not, you know, instinctive about it the way that somebody like Grant Williams is. And we can talk about him too if you want. He was pretty fantastic. But I just think with Rob, he is, you know, he's learning, he's getting better, he is a disaster on one end of the floor, but that's a pretty normal end of the floor for a young big man to be a disaster on, especially when he's still kind of getting used to things. And I still think that he was a little bit more helpful than Enes Kanter was. All of that said.
Let's take a break and continue this conversation after the break, and then we'll get a little bit into the Clippers in the second segment here too. So we'll be right back with more of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So we started this conversation about the bigs because that's the one of the topics, one of the frontline topics for the Celtics. Robert Williams, Enes Kanter, both not good defensively in this game. Kanter made a couple of really bad mistakes. Brad was pissed when he didn't challenge a Baines three. And it's one of the things, like, being like 3 feet away from Brad in this game, like you really get to see exactly how much he gets on some.
Yeah,
guys.
How are those floor side seats?
Oh my god! Oh my god! Like next time, like I'm obligated to give that seat to you next time if there's an option, because it's, you just see so much. Now what you don't see is up top and seeing plays develop. So you focus on different things. There was a stretch there where I had no idea what the time and the score was. I was so fascinated by all the little things. But you hear Brad like really get on Cantor's case when he wasn't up on Baines. And then Kanter like just does what he does on a pick and roll. Instead of sliding, he opens up his hips and he turns and try to runs next to the guy and just gives up the lane. And just it was not good. And he only played like 5-6 minutes in this game.
Never came back in the second half. And you could see why, too. I mean, guys were just blowing by him. Like, I'm sorry. If Dario Saric and Kaminsky are just running right by you to the rim, like, that's
horrible.
That's not ideal. And look, I mean, he brings something on the other end. Like, I'm sure we've talked about it on here before. Like, we've talked about it on Mass Live 100 times. Like, he brings offense. He, you know, brings offensive rebounds. There are matchups that there's matchups where he's going to be useful. Phoenix is a tough one because he's got to get out to the three-point line, and he's not good at that. And they're going to put him in pick and rolls as much as they can, and he's not good at that.
Right.
So it's a tough matchup for him. You know, there will be moments where he gets on the floor more, you know, Philadelphia. Yeah. But Phoenix was not that moment.
That was not that moment. And that means that Rob has to be better.
Yeah.
That's because somebody has to play those second unit minutes. And Rob has been – I can see it. I can see the plus minus there makes sense, because one thing that has stood out offensively from Rob is the dribble handoffs and the high post stuff, where he's making good passes, good reads, setting good picks. He does have a positive offensively, but frankly, that's secondary for him. Rob needs to be the guy that's solid offensively and really good defensively.
Right.
His offense isn't get it in the post. He took that jumper yesterday, and I feel like Brad,
could you see Brad when he said that or when he did that? Because I couldn't, but I can only imagine what he was thinking.
It was, he didn't say anything. He just, you ever see somebody just shoulders go slump? Like, you just kind of felt, because I don't think he wanted to be overly discouraging in that moment, but like, and maybe it's different. You got to coach different guys differently. And so when Carson took that shot, where he got the screen and the rescreen and he took like a step in from three, Brad just looked at him and was like, Carson, you got to take good ones. But he didn't say shit to Robert Williams.
Right.
And I think because Robert Williams might like Carson can be like, what are you talking about? I got it. Like he's a tough-minded guy.
Yeah.
I think Rob would just kind of like maybe go into a bit of a shell in that moment.
I could see that. I could also just see like generally I think Rob is trying to do the right thing. Like I don't think they're, you
right.
know, and he's making a lot of mistakes, but like I think generally he is trying to, you know, make the right play. I think this comes in defensively where you can like see some promise with him. Like he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to, you know, defend within the scheme. He's trying to, you know, that jumper. Other bigs occasionally take that jumper in, yeah. And it's fine. And it is funny just because I don't know if you remember in Summer League, Scott Morrison, when Rob took a couple of those, yes. And Scott openly was like, he's got to cut that out. Like,
that's just a
brutal shot. Like,
he was like, I remember that because I was like, is that something you guys are working on? He's like, no, yeah. Not one bit. Don't do that.
And that's Summer League with a guy that they're actually actively trying to improve, that they were still just like, no. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, like, I think you're 100% right. It comes down to defense. That's where he needs to improve. That's where he needs to be good. The offense is whatever. He needs to be a roll man who can pass. And if right. he can do all that stuff, then he's fine. And otherwise, yeah.
He just has bad habits that need to be broken.
For sure.
The more than any other play, I think the closeout on Aaron Baines in the corner where he bit on a pump fake and Baines drove and dished. Aaron freaking Baines drove and dished for a layup because Rob bit on an up fake.
It's not what you want.
That right there is the lack of discipline. And I know that Baines is a much better 3-point shooter and you got to get up in his face.
Korver, as Brad called
him. Yeah, he's out there like Korver, like Brad said. But you have to have just that discipline. And
he's got to stay down. He's got to stay down.
I think he can get there. I want to know what the best path for him to get there is, because they're going to need him to get there, and they're going to need him to get there tonight against the Clippers, because that's going to be a team that I don't think you can play Enes Kanter at all in this game. Like, who does Enes Kanter guard in this?
Montrezl Harrell, I guess.
No, God,
but
no.
like it's
it Zubac.
Zubac, there it is.
Maybe he can probably guard Zubac.
Yeah.
Maybe you start Zubac, but then you're just gonna run pick and roll, like, and you're just gonna have Pat Beverly picking him apart. And I don't know, Kawhi's questionable. We don't know if he's gonna play. He's got that left knee contusion. Paul George is back and has had
just
some pretty
hooping.
Yeah, he's had a pretty nice return. So he's already averaging like 29. Was he shooting? 52% from three? Yeah, he's doing all right.
I think it was the Windhorst Hoop Collective pod where they talked about him, and they said, like, look, this is not a leg injury. This is a shoulder injury. So this is something that he has been playing through for a long time that is now better. It's not something that he needs to recover from
right.
and regain confidence from. He can just go out there and play because, you know, like it was an upper body injury. And so, yeah, he's just come out and he's just killing
tearing
right now.
It up. So can't you see, like, even if they do decide to start him on Zubac and sub in Tice, can't you just see them just creating switches? Like, isn't the nightmare having Kanter out there switched onto Paul George and everybody just crying?
Yeah, I think you just do Tice again. I mean, he's smaller than Zubac, but like, okay, like you deal with that. Like, you know, they've tried it against other big men, and these guys fly around so well. I think you just throw Tice out there again. I mean, you know, you got to keep Kanter happy somehow and keep minutes with him, but I don't know that there's a...
This is a horrible matchup.
This is a tough matchup for him.
I mean, it's the only other center on the roster is Harrell, and that's... He's just too mobile.
Speaking of pick and rolls,
He's too mobile. He's going to get destroyed. But Harrell's going to do chin-ups in the rim.
Well, especially because the guy who will be initiating those with Harrell is Lou Will.
Yeah. So I don't know if Kanter can play at all, which puts a ton of pressure on Rob to be focused and play that pick and roll the right way. And damn it, stay on your feet. It should be so easy. We and I have talked about this maybe on the podcast where he's been so used to, this is your point, he's been so used to using that athleticism that that's one of the hard habits to break. But you let the guy release the ball and then use the athleticism to go up and get it at the peak of the shot.
Which he can do, which is bonkers.
Right. It's not... He can defend these things differently than a regular person.
Yeah.
Just stop using your superpowers the wrong way. Use them the right way. Let the guy
great power,
launch
great
that
responsibility,
floater.
All that.
All of that stuff. I mean, obviously, this is going to be a very, very difficult game. This is going to fall on the... They've played great perimeter defense. They've been, generally speaking, not really against Sacramento, but they've been connected. The switches have been good. It's going to fall on, like, Tatum and Brown to switch on these plays. If they're lucky and Kawhi doesn't play, then...
Then they still have to stop Paul George.
They have to stop, you know, an MVP candidate from last year. But it's going to take that connected switching and getting into these passing lanes.
Yeah. My last thing on the Clippers is this is one of the games where they're really going to miss Gordon Hayward. Because, like,
for sure.
Like, just having that extra mobile, versatile defensive guy who, on the other end, is like a star. Like, this is a tough one to not have him. Because against this team, you just need as much versatility, as many wings, as much as you can do. So that's, you know... Yeah, having your 20-8-8 all-star back would probably help.
Yeah, that would be nice. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to complain about traveling. So be sure to stick around for that on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So, I've been told that people like behind-the-scenes type stories.
Yeah.
From the beat. And so, here we are. It's Tuesday night in Los Angeles. I flew out to San Francisco on Thursday night, so I'm on my fourth city in, 5 days?
Sure.
Whatever it is. So anyway, first of all, I get to the airport, and who shows up at the American Airlines terminal but Brian Scalabrine? Why is Scal flying commercial? Doesn't he get to fly with the team?
You got to get the points up. Honestly, like, you got to get the points up. Yeah,
that's
like,
what it is.
And yeah, you know, me and Scal, the American Airlines boys.
I also didn't see him picking up a bag at baggage claim, which means I'm assuming that he put his bag on the Celtics plane but took a commercial flight to get his points.
Let's be honest. You're frying Scal right now because Scal fried you first.
Well, yes. First of all, that's exactly what it is. Because Scal called me out at the terminal. We were sitting there having a nice, deep basketball conversation. We're trying to figure out why the Sixers chose Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler and having this whole big thing. And then he looks at me, he's like, so you good with wearing the mesh shorts? And I'm wearing regular blue. Would you call these mesh shorts? Is that what they are?
Basketball shorts.
Workout shorts. You know? I'm flying. I'm going comfort all the way. I'm flying from Phoenix to LA. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt because back in Boston, it's like 40 degrees and I haven't had a chance to do this in a couple months. So I'm excited about this opportunity to do shorts and a t-shirt. Now, Scal says I'm too old to be walking around in basketball shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's your expert take here?
My expert take is that it has nothing to do with age. It's just, like, I don't understand why somebody would want to wear shorts on a plane. Like, the planes are so disgusting, man. Like, you got to have, like, a barrier between you and the disgusting
seat. You and
seat.
Himmelsbach saying the same thing.
Himmelsbach's right. like you got to have sweatpants. These sweatpants are the way to go.
Wait a minute. If you're flying in August and it's 90 degrees, you're showing up in sweatpants?
Probably, yeah. Probably.
That's insanity.
It depends. Now I got to remember because I don't remember how I flew to Vegas. But yeah, I'm more likely
to
wear sweatpants.
It's like 1,000 degrees when you go to summer league. Yeah. I am wearing shorts. I'm not putting any long pants on.
Okay, fair enough. But it's November.
In Phoenix!
Yeah, but like...
It was 80 degrees! I'm flying
to the
70s.
I don't know, man.
70-something degrees. When you
slum it with us on American Airlines, you have to have a barrior between you and the
seat. Can I tell you the funniest part about all this? The person I was sitting next to was so unpleasant that I really kind of wish I was wearing pants. I sat there.
I was really hoping you were going to say they were also wearing shorts and you were just like rubbing legs whole time.
No, it would have been worse. I had half my body out into the aisle. And I was sitting there cursing out Scal because I'm like, you know what? I wish I had pants on right now. But it was more because of him, not me. But I don't think, to his point, I don't think you're too old. I'm 46. I'm out there in my shorts, my basketball shorts. I'm always going to be out there in my basketball shorts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't see.
Yeah, you're on brand. You've never switched up on that, so I'll give you that. Yeah,
that's who I am. I don't think it's whatever. I think it's normal.
Yeah, yeah. I have no further takes. No. I have no further takes on the all subject. Right. I'll wear sweatpants. Yeah. Do you should I complain about LA for like the next 25 minutes?
Well, I mean, your friends here are sitting here starving,
so. I'll just quick do LAX. LAX is a huge problem, man. They got to fix this. That's a whole thing with
they just broke it.
It's so broken.
Although I didn't think so LAX, for people who are listening, this is just basically a therapy session now. LAX, what they did was if you're ever flying to Los Angeles now, if you pick up a bag, you got to get on a shuttle and they take the shuttle they shuttle you out to this other lot where you have to get in line for your Lyft or Uber. So no more just get off the plane, call your car, pick up your bag, and get into the car. You have to now get in line like the old school taxi lines at every old airport. So
that really, I want to shout out everybody in tech for fixing things. It's so much better now. just a great way to finish a nice trip is to shuffle like cattle into a bus and then just keep shuffling through line after line until you can finally get to your airport or to your hotel.
That's all you had?
Well, I mean, I have a million other things, but also I don't want a bunch of people from LA in my Twitter mentions. So,
I'm sure they don't like LAX either.
Yeah, but I also don't really like.
Oh, you don't like LAX? You're talking about the city of Los Angeles.
I gotcha. I have one other thing though, and this is my last travel thing. People complain about sports writers complaining about travel on Twitter. It's like, and this is gonna get a little meta, but people are always like, oh, like you're always like complaining about your flight, complaining about your hotel. Yeah, dude, that's what I'm going through right now. I'm on Twitter talking about my life just like the rest of you. You guys are all out complaining about your, Subway sandwich or something. I'm complaining about my flight that sucked. Like, you didn't get enough lettuce. I didn't have enough room, or my flight was delayed, or something sucked, and I'm trying to get the points. So that's my complaint. Like, if you want to follow me on Twitter, every once in a while, you're going to have to listen to me complain about my travel and suck it up. You want my awesome Celtics tweets? You're going to get the occasional crappy complaint about American Airlines.
That is amazing.
That's my 1 minute rant.
It's true though, because if anybody who kind of jokes about us complaining on Twitter, if anybody were to take a vacation or something like that and something went wrong with their flight, what would they do?
You'd probably complain about it on Twitter.
Because that's why every friggin' place now has their own Twitter support thing.
Yeah.
You tweet them and you put them on blast. And then you're like, oh, God, we got to help you out. So it's all a big public thing. We just happen to be in airports dozens of times per year. So, this road trip is you fly into San Francisco, you fly out of San Francisco. Actually, I drove. But you fly out of Sacramento, in and out. So you're just in and out of every city. So it's like we go to 40 games and we're flying 80 times. And it's bound to happen.
It's horrific.
Yeah, it's bound to happen that you're going to have something that goes wrong and you do what everybody else does. It just so happens that they follow a lot of sports writers and a lot of us end up having the same problems on the same time because it's the same weather that we're traveling through. Nope. So it's me, you, Jay, Himmelsbach, we're all tweeting our airlines and people are like, oh, shut the hell up. But that's how it goes. You know, got to get them points.
And honestly, again, we're just complaining because, sometimes stuff sucks and you complain about it.
That's it.
Yep.
And now we've subjected all of my listeners.
And ask me how many apologies I have for your listeners having to listen to that. Zero. Zero apologies.
I didn't ask you.
Yeah, I know.
You gave the answer anyway. All right. Well, that was fun. Hope you still want to subscribe to this podcast. You can do that anywhere podcasts exist. Hope you still want to give us that 5-star rating. That would be awesome. And a written review. A good written review. Very helpful. Share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Complain about us on Twitter.